This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the chest. Coronavirus Self-Isolation Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Back of the Nest, the lockdown sessions. I'm Chris Hambling, and in our final show before the season restarts in a few weeks, we're joined by one of our favourite people, the amazing Peter Ramage. We'll be chatting with Rambo, playing another of Sam's famous quizzes, and rounding up the most important Palace chat.
No paywall, no subscription. Back of the Nest. Fan-created podcasts, videos and articles. Free forever.
Right, with me today, I have Patrick O'Connor.
Hello.
Hello, Patrick. We also have Sam Clacker lurking in the background. Hello, Sam.
Hello, the famous lurker.
You are famously famous for lurking. Mm-hmm. And we also have lockdown-breaking Ute DR Kernas.
Here we go. I'm not even going to say hello to you.
No?
Because you made a crazy assumption.
You have been out. You had 4 hours sleep. You're a busy man. You're saying out with your G's and your road men.
No, you're just making this up. I said 4 hours sleep. I didn't say I was out and about and just, you know.
Did you or did you not say that lockdown is over?
Oh, yeah, I said that because, come on. Look outside your window. Maybe not your window.
Not my window, no.
Yeah. God, no. You got letters in front of your window. It's a bit weird. But,
hey, that was in a private chat between me, you, and Peter Ramage.
Yeah. But if you just look outside the window, if you're on the main road, you'll see that everyone is out. Even if you look on social media, everyone's on the beaches. This ain't lockdown anymore. We need a new name. I said this on Twitter yesterday. It is nowhere on earth a lockdown. A lockdown is when everyone stays inside. This is just free for all now. We change game modes.
Have you got any suggestions for names?
No, that's what I asked on Twitter, but only Nav replied and he said open up. And that was just so boring. Left it.
There you go. He's given you the respect of a reply when no one else has, and you just disrespect him straight away. And what have you been doing then? What have you been doing out all the time, saying you ain't got any time, you're a busy man?
I wasn't out all the time. I went, I done a 150-mile round trip. To Hereford, dropped my mum off to my cousin, and then, yeah, that's it. Went to my auntie's house and then came back.
I haven't spoken to you in about 4 weeks. That's not all you've done.
Also, I'm busy with other stuff as well. I'm busy with the shop, implementing new things there. So yeah, just and YouTube. What else have I been doing? Yeah, I've been busy. You know what? That's what I'm saying. It's not really lockdown for me anymore because lockdown, I was bored and stuff. But now I've got just so many things to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've only listed two, but...
Three.
What's happening in the shop? Social distance kebab making. How's that getting coming along?
That's good. I mean, it's not really social distance kebab making because that doesn't really work because the shop itself is 2 meters wide. Yeah, but we're implementing new things, put a new menu in, you know, taking out the some fried chicken. Yeah, some fried chicken's going.
Are you keeping the 2 ounce cheeseburgers?
Yep, I'm putting a 6 and a 12 ounce as well.
Okay.
Doing that, and then put on grilled chicken wings. So yeah, a couple of new things going on about there. But hey, I'm not really been in lockdown, you know. I haven't got the time to put lettuce on my window. I let it grow there. haven't been that unoccupied.
Can't be angry at me for growing a lettuce, mate. You know?
Who the hell? You cost me about my mouthwash thing, but having it, I just don't know. I just don't know what to say about that. Can you just imagine, like, waking up in the morning and going downstairs and there's a couple lettuces just standing in your window?
Just one lettuce.
Okay. Wow. It still doesn't help.
I mean, but look, anyway, let's not make this about my lettuce. Patrick, you got any questions for DR about his behaviour?
DR, I'm disappointed in you, seriously. I understand, you know, you're probably a Boris Johnson fan and just want to go all the country. Well, obviously, I mean, you've blatantly broken the lockdown and you've taken trips of more than, what was it, 100-mile round trip, you said, to Hereford?
Hold up, yeah. Hold up. I've seen people...
Was it for childcare?
No, reason? I've seen... Yeah, we can do that. if you class my mom as a child, I don't know how the roles switch like that. But no, but I've seen people as, like, top officials have coronavirus and travel that long and nothing happened to them. So, you can't really blame old dear and Croydon having a little trip to his cousin's house. I didn't go to the beach or anything.
Doesn't
but
make it right.
I have no symptoms as well. Well,
Mikey, we need a siren when we start getting too political, if we can. Otherwise, Chris Clark's going to run riot next time he's on. Sam, what do you make of all this? You're a reasonable person.
Am I? Well, I mean, I guess you are allowed to drive to Hereford and back at the moment.
Specifically Hereford or anywhere?
Well, anywhere you can make within a normal day, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because where, depending on the length of the journey, where do you go to the toilet? Dia, where do you go to the toilet?
I didn't go to the toilet.
Right? Well,
I didn't go to the toilet. I just had to hold it in for the 3-hour journey. But I left that night. That's the thing. I left that night. So I was here like at 2, 3 a.m. So everywhere was closed. So I made sure I took precautionary measures to make sure that even if I had the toilet, I can't leave the car. So I left that night on purpose.
Mask, gloves, anything? Wear a mask, a glove, anything precautionary?
But there's no point. I mean, I'm in a car. I mean, unless the cars get infected as well now, I won't be really damaging no one. So, yeah. But there is a mask in the car, but I didn't wear it because it's not mine.
Oh, dear. How you doing, Patrick? You all right?
Listen, we have just been... We've opened up in New York now with phase one. And what DR did, if he did it in America, it would be... Listen, Dia, I'm going to tell you as a friend, don't do what other people do. It's not a good idea. Just do what you think is right. What you're doing, I'm sorry, is not right, mate. Don't. Just don't follow people. Please don't. I beg you.
I didn't... No, but it's different here, Patrick. In America, it's like a grid system. Here, first of all, if you go outside, you'll see everyone is outside. Like, even the rules, they are changing. I think you're allowed 6 people at once now. You're allowed to go to the park with family members, which I've done. So yeah, like it's a bit different here to compare to what happened in New York.
You go to the park with family members or fans?
And, I went with family members.
Is your crew only 6 strong, or have you got more than 6 in your crew?
I didn't go out with no one like that.
No.
So yeah,
no.
I was in a car with my mum driving for 3 hours. I didn't go out to the beach where everyone else.
No, but you mentioned the park. What's that with this park?
Well, I'm allowed to, according to the rules.
Yeah, no, I'm just asking some questions about it. Did you have a nice time? Who was there? How many
people? Lots of people were there. Not that I know, but I just saw lots of people in the park. But they were all socially distancing as well. It was actually very nice. It was very nice to see people getting active again.
Okay, well, look. In 2 weeks' time, we'll have a look at the R rate, and if we see that creeping up, DR, everyone's coming for you. Yeah,
because I drove for 3 hours in my car and didn't leave the car. Yep.
I think you had a toilet break. I've been in a car with you for that length of time, and I know what you're like with your toilet breaks.
I don't think so.
I mean, I've seen you try and hold it, but it didn't work, did it? Anyway, I think I've got to move us on from that. Very quickly, I want to mention our sponsor, Pitch Sport Football. Do download those words, Pitch Sport Football. Not download those words, Google those words and download the app from their site and join us on there. Football's about to start up again, all going to plan. You can get on there, make some predictions, answer some videos, watch some of their content. It's a great site. They're supporting us, so please support them. If you do want to get in touch with us, you can WhatsApp voice message us on 0203 575 1266. And if you just search Back of the Nest on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube, you'll find our relevant channels there. And email is hi@backofthenest.com. And don't forget, on your chosen podcast app, to give us a 5-star review. And this time out, if you can somehow leave a review that gives a full and frank opinion of Kernaz, we'd appreciate it. Right, and as something very special and new, we are now on Hot Mic. That's H-O-T space M-I-C. If you can download that app and register and follow us on there, we follow us by adding our code, which is just B-O-T-N. And to know what that's all about, is that a sentence? Yeah, we'll keep it that way. DR Kernaz is about to tell us. DR, what is Hot Mic?
So Hot Mic is basically an app, and it's a live streaming app where fans can watch the game live and also see your reaction, so see our commentary. So what we'll be doing is we'll basically be commentating on the game going on, and it'll all be in sync, so you won't be ahead or behind due to the technology that they use. So it'll be fun. You'll see all our reactions. If you do enjoy the pods and if you do enjoy listening to us, then seeing us react to Palace live in the flesh, that will be amazing, I think. And I'm really excited to do it. But yeah, it's just download the app Hot Mic. If you go on the App Store on your phone and download it and write Back of the Net, no, B-O-T-N, that's the code. And then, yeah, start following us and we'll be streaming there.
I mean, I searched Back and I found it.
Okay.
So it's quite, yeah, we're pretty easy to find on there once you've registered. But as DR says, B-O-T-N is the code. Now, DR, do we have any ideas of what the kind of rules are? Because you've been to games with me. I sometimes find it difficult, as do you, to control the things that I say and how I say them. What's that going to be like?
That's a very good question, because I haven't really asked him about the rules, about swearing, about Roy Hodgson not making substitutions. I guess that will be allowed, being angry about that. I'm not too sure if we can swear. I mean, if we can swear, then you'll see the real, real raw reactions. Well, if we can't, then we can change the words about, I guess, and swear like that. Instead of saying the F words, we can say flaffle, something like that.
Flaffle.
But yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I'm not too sure. I'll have to ask them.
Yeah, I think you need to. You've got a question, Patrick?
Not a question. I'm just going to say I'm happy that they don't have that in America. Because the last time I was on camera during the Palace match, it was 2 years ago, away to West Ham, watching Wayne Hennessy letting two goals. I almost had a brain hemorrhage. So let me tell you something. I'm glad I'm not part of this. But enjoy. It sounds like a lot of fun. It really does.
You could be part of it exactly. During the lockdown process. Hope the idea is that obviously we would eventually all be in one place doing this. But up until that point, dear, I believe we can all do it remotely from where we are.
Exactly, we can do it from where we are, but also the new rules that's coming out is, I think 6 people can meet up at once, and it'll be so
outside distance. Though we'd have to do it outside.
Oh, it's outside. Yeah, we can all sit in the garden, put the TV in the garden and then watch it like that. But yeah, you can do it remotely at home. And also, it's not only Palace, you can go there to watch a bunch of other stuff, all sports, so the Bundesliga, the Premier League, the Liga, I think even American sports, when it's back, the MLS, the NBA. So yeah, they've got some big names and they've got some big plans coming up as well. So I'm really excited to see what happens.
Well, there we go. Get involved in that. And obviously you'll hear more from us ahead of the first game, I believe, which I would imagine we'll be covering in that form. Should be exciting.
Yeah, hopefully. That's if the technology does mess up. But
just thinking as well to myself there, what if it's one of those really boring games and what I get like during those? I'll tell you what would be really interesting. You know Chris Clark?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know how Chris Clark misses every goal because he goes for beer?
Oh, he misses games sometimes, but yeah.
Yeah. do you think that might happen again? You might see him disappear to the fridge during commentary.
I mean,
way, way too early.
if that happens whilst we're at home, then I think I've lost all faith in Chris Clark. I mean, I see at games, but if he can't even stay on the camera at home and he just stays in the kitchen for 90 minutes, then I'll lose faith. But I think it'll be interesting because fans can also talk in the chat with us. So we can actually see the reactions and what they're thinking about the game. And if it gets boring, then they can throw the odd question or two. And then, you know, that could make it interesting. That's all part of the game.
Can they even comment? Well, obviously, they can comment on what they want. They can start talking about some of the things that you say and do, couldn't they?
Well, yeah, and some of the things that you say and do as well. It's not only limited to me. So, yeah, it should be great.
I think mainly it should be directed at you. Because that's where the most fun is, right?
All I'm saying is if you want to join in, I mean, you're going to be watching a game anyways. If you want to join in and chat whilst watching a game, it'll be real fun. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how many guys do actually join in and interacting with people live.
Right, first up, it's a fantastic interview with the wonderful.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Peter Ramage.
Reviews, predictions, comments and rants. Send us your voice clips on WhatsApp. 0203 575 1266.
Right, we are joined by Peter Ramage. Peter, you've been with us since we were called Homestar Radio. We've had you on many, many times, and welcome back.
Thank you very much for having us. Good morning, all.
No problem at all. And it is morning very much for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 6:10 in the morning here in Phoenix. So it's but this is I'm normally in the office before 6, so it's just the start of the working day for me.
All right. And Patrick, you're also in the US. Would it be an hour further ahead for you?
Yeah, I'm in New York. It's 10 after 9 here, so yeah.
Oh, bloody hell. It's a big country, isn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, we won't mention that Patrick was late and Rambo wasn't. So let's move swiftly on. So you are a Geordie in the US. You've been there for a while. How do they cope with the Geordie accent?
Struggle a little bit, to be fair. I've got a few interpreters amongst the group that help communicate with the rest of these Americans, but no, it's all right. I have to talk a little bit slower, a little bit more of the Queen's English, but every now and then when I get a little bit angry, the old Geordie twang comes out a little bit more stronger than other times.
Have you managed to get anyone saying Hawaii yet?
Oh, they'll all say it in the morning.
Love it. So in general, I mean, you know, you did a bit with the Palace website talking about how that move came about. And, you know, you were looking at a contract at Blackpool, was it, I think? And
correct.
Ended up getting the call. Did you ever intend, I mean, we say, actually, to be fair, you said you didn't really intend to be out there 3.5 years. But, you know, how did that happen? How did that sort of, how did your mind get changed in terms of that experience?
Good question. I mean, I came out here, it was the summer of 2016. Like I said, I was about to go to Blackpool on loan. I was about to go on Blackpool on trial. And then put the phone down to Gary Bowyer and literally start to pack my suitcase to go down. And I got a phone call from Mark Burcham, who is ex-Millwall QPR midfield player. Worked with Birch at QPR when I was there. And he just rang and asked if I wanted to come out. Came out for 10-day trial, not even a 10-day trial, really. It was more of a 10-day holiday, to be honest with you. But 3 days into it, signed. And end of 2017, I retired, went back to Newcastle, started coaching at the academy, and I was really enjoying that. Beginning my coaching career, and just somewhat out of the blue, the coach out here, Patrice Carteron, left to go to a club in Africa, and the assistant manager, Rick Shantz, who was the assistant when I was here, just rang up and asked if I wanted to come out and help be one of his assistants. And like I said, it was completely out of the blue. Wasn't 100% sure whether it was what I wanted to do because, you know, I was back at Newcastle, back home. The family were home. Kids were settled in school. But at the time, it was a part-time job. And there was no sign of a sort of a full-time position, which I didn't make a lot of money in football for me just to sit on my backside and not do anything. And so I just thought, why not? It was an experience that I thought I needed in my coaching lifetime, as short as it was, to come out and kind of work with senior players, senior football, at a club that I know. And I mean, even in the 80 or nearly 2 months that I've been, 2 years that I've been here back coaching, the club's grown and grown to a point where we're, you know, we're going to become one of the potentially one of the biggest clubs on the west coast of America, and that's including MLS.
That's amazing. I know our US correspondent Patrick's got a few questions relating to your experience at Phoenix and also the sort of playing standard, I guess, in the US. So do you want to jump in now, Patrick?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, Rambo, because I'm over here, I get to see a lot of the MLS and even USL coach some players actually play USL. So how would you describe the level of USL compared to like in England?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it's tough because it's nowhere near the... I think the MLS is somewhat on a championship level.
Agree, yeah.
I don't think many of the teams could survive in the Premier League, if I'm brutally honest with you, and that even including LAFC. But then again, I think it's a different kind of brand of football over here. Obviously, the weather's different and different... Well, certainly the West Coast of America, it certainly is. But USL, again, it's very tough because quite a large portion of our league is made up of somewhat reserve team MLS's teams. So, you know, you've got a bit of mixture of youth and then the experience of likes of ourselves, New Mexico, El Paso, San Antonio. I mean, we probably could, again, it's a different brand of football, different type of football. So it's really hard to kind of compare it to back home. You know, we couldn't survive in League One or League Two, you know, for the physicality side of things. But then again, I think some of our football would beat the League One and League Two teams, if you know what I mean. It's just kind of hard to somewhat compare it. But I mean, the USL's grown, the MLS has grown even more so. You know, you're starting to see it becoming less of a retirement home for top-class players.
Right.
You know, you're starting to get more European and South American based players coming at a younger age and doing really well, and that's helping the MLS grow, and it's therefore also helping the USL as well.
The MLS side, I agree with Rambo as far as, you know, it's definitely getting better. Now, just a follow up, what about the how would you compare like the youth academies over here compared to England? I know there's been a change now with MLS and the development academies. What do you think the comparison between that here and in England now?
Yeah, it's a really good question because I'm starting to transition a little bit more into it. So I'm learning a bit more about the youth academies. I mean, our product was somewhat of a, the kids paid to come to our academy, but now we're moving into, you know, we pay for it. Obviously, the America kind of disbanded the DA, which I think was always going to happen. Because the MLS were talking about moving into their own kind of academy leagues, which, you know, we're in talks about joining, which will be huge for our club.
Yeah.
But it's more, at this moment in time, from my understanding, it's a little bit more like youth clubs more than academies, certainly at USL level. MLS, I've not really got a lot of knowledge about it, but, I mean, they're starting to really move towards a kind of European style of academy where kids are brought in at a young age with the thought process of trying to get them in the first team. But I mean, as you well know, Patrick, over here, college is a huge thing for American kids. So trying to get them to come in to academies to become professional footballers is one battle. The other battle is trying to keep them in here because their parents want them to go to university and get their education. So
I
think that's the next step that certainly we're going to have to try and convince parents to allow them kids to come and join our academy. But even more so, you know, the MLS, which I don't know how that's going to have a knock-on effect with the college soccer programs. Right. You know, it might be a detriment to that, and therefore will that, I don't know, have a detriment to, you know, the educational program. So there's still a lot of things to be worked out. I think it's moving in the right direction. I think American soccer will progress if we do move into a more kind of European style academy system. But then again, how are they going to bridge that, you know, gap of getting the best of both worlds, where kids get to get their education? Because, you know, I like the age-old saying, it's, you know, it's 0.001% of players that go into academies actually end up becoming professional footballers. So
wow,
it's a hell of a lot of players that don't make it. So what are they going to do with the rest of their lives?
There's been suggestions of introducing the salary cap in European football. I think there's one in MLS, but I'm not too sure about the USL. What do you think of the idea of having a salary cap for European clubs? I mean, the money involved here is a whole load different to what's over in America. We already see in the NBA and other big leagues. Do you think it'll work in European football?
No, because it's a brutal answer. Because I think clubs, players, and agents will find ways to get around that. I think yes, you probably could have a salary cap, but then you might see, you know, endorsement levels just go through the roof, where clubs are kind of paying Adidas for the player to wear their boots or something stupid like that. So, you know, whilst I think it could work, I think there'll be ways around it for the players to still earn astronomical amounts of money. You know, benefits that go along with salaries, bonuses. You know, there might be more bonus related structures towards it. So, yeah, you might get the salary caps, but the top players will still get the top money. And I still think that'll kind of filter down.
What's happening with the USL? I follow the NBA, so I know that they're going to be most likely going to Disney World and continuing the season at neutral grounds there. But is there any talks of the USL continuing anytime soon?
Yeah, there is. The league and the owners are in discussions about that. There's kind of no news at this moment in time. I mean, we have kind of a restart date in July. I think Patrick will testify, every state's different in terms of where they are in kind of the lockdown stages. So, you know, we've got East Coast teams, we've got West Coast teams, we've got Central American teams. Every state's in a different phase. So I think they're just trying to kind of figure that out. I don't think we will move to a neutral venue like the MLS are talking about, going to obviously Disneyland. Don't think that would work for us from a financial standpoint. Obviously MLS owns all the clubs basically. USL doesn't own our clubs. So we would have to foot the bill for that, which I think would just be financially out of the reach of quite a few of the clubs in our league. So there is, you know, from my understanding, we will be playing some sort of a season. It's just now trying to figure out, you know, the logistics of it.
The last of Patrick's questions, which I'll ask for him, was, what was it like working with Didier Drogba?
You know what it was? It was one hell of an experience, because even at 40-year-old, his level of professionalism was as good as I've come across. I mean, he didn't come here just to, you know, see out the rest of his career. He came out here to win. From day one, he was, he couldn't run. I mean, the geezer was 40-year-old and, you know, stiffer than Glenn Murray. But
I believe that.
I tell you what, he trained hard. He done all the stuff off the field. You know, he had his own. I mean, he's privileged with the career that he's had, that he's got a lot of good people around him, but he had his own, you know, personal trainers that kept him fit, kept him in shape, because, you know, obviously it did take him longer to recover from games. The guy's 40-year-old, but, you know, when he stepped onto the field or stepped into the building for training, you know, he was switched on. He was one of the lads as well, you know, whilst he's one of the owners and he's paying our wages somewhat. Yeah, he was still one of the boys, you know, taking us some nights out. And it was really, you know, inspiring to see that a guy at that age, you know, how dedicated he was. And it was scary to think what he was like when he was in his pomp.
Just checking, you retired at what age?
34 I was when I retired. I just got to a point, I could have kept on going and I wanted to keep on going, but I left here it was a Thursday afternoon in October. I can't remember the date, But I left here on the Thursday and literally touched down in Newcastle on the Friday. And I went into the I got a phone call to go into the academy on the Saturday. And I began coaching on the Monday. So I had no real time to kind of make the decision whether to continue playing or not. It was somewhat taken out my hands. But I don't regret it, to be honest with you. Coaching was always something that I wanted to go into. And the opportunity to go back into and start at Newcastle, if I'd hadn't taken that opportunity there and then, it might not have been then there, you know, when I had come to make the decision. So I kind of called time quicker than I wanted to, but I don't regret it.
No, completely understandable. I remember seeing you at, you know, Palace under 23/youth games as well. So you're obviously taking an interest back then as well.
Yeah, it's something, you know what it is? It was something probably from the age of, I mean, it was about 2021 when, you know, when we were doing, began my B license when I was at Newcastle playing. Then I started to get into the first team and football took over. But then I done my cruciate when I was at QPR and I was about 25, 26. And, you know, I had a lot of time on my hands. So I started, you know, going into the QPR, and that's when I kind of met Birch and got more talking to him. And I just had a passion for it. I always wanted to stay in the game when I finished. And, you know, coaching's probably the second best thing to do outside of playing. So I got a real thirst for it, certainly from a younger age. And you know, like I said, when I stepped off the plane at Newcastle and Newcastle offered me the kind of the role that they did, I just thought it was time.
Nah, absolutely. Well, talking of you know, obviously Newcastle, we had a quick brief chat, and I won't repeat what I said pre-show to really anger you. But obviously, strongly suggested that a takeover is imminent in terms of being confirmed at Newcastle by the Saudi royal family, and obviously all sorts of riches come with that. What do you make of that? I mean, obviously, I suppose you've got to divide it between, as a fan, the excitement of almost that freedom to build a challenging squad at the top of the league versus, you know, the questions of identity that people sometimes get concerned about. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I think we just want the change now. It's been, you know, somewhat of a lull period for us over the last few years. You know, we haven't kicked on from, you know, the odd season where we kind of excelled, and I think it's just frustration that, you know, Mike alone back in, what was it, 2004 was our record transfer of 16 million, and it's taken, you know, something like 16 years to beat that record. And with all due respect, you know, Palace are going out and spending 30 million on Benteke and 21 million on Sacco, and you're thinking, well, when we look at things from a Geordie's perspective, you know, how can Palace be going and doing this kind of transfer when, you know, when we've got the same kind of funds or the same kind of ownership group in terms of level of wealth, and we're not doing it, and it's just frustrating. So, you know, if these guys come in with the wealth that they, you know, is reported, it's quite exciting for Newcastle to be thinking that, on Newcastle fans, we think it could be the richest club in the world. And, you know, you're seeing the kind of the stars that could be linked, you know, certainly in this summer and going forward. You know, it's pretty exciting, but obviously there's a lot of red tape for that ownership group to go through to try and get to own the club. But if it happens, then long may the good times roll. It'll be fun.
I've seen lots of star names linked to Newcastle already, but one name that I don't like in particular is Wilfred Zaha. He's been linked to a move to Newcastle. I mean, don't do that to us, Rambo. We're on good terms there.
It'll be bittersweet. You know, I think Wilf's now, he's now at a moment in his career where if he's got aspirations to get to that next level, with all due respect to Palace, and I really mean this, that he's got to leave. No, Newcastle wouldn't be a good move for him in that respect. Obviously, it would be probably more financial based than anything else if he was to come to Newcastle. And we're just talking hypothetically here. But, you know, for me, for Wilf, I think if he wants to break into the top four, and, you know, Palace have got the ability to do it, but, you know, it's going to be a lot harder for them to do it than for the likes of we have to go to Chelsea or Man United or Arsenal or, you know, Man City or whatever the top clubs, or even, you know, I see him linked with, you know, some of the top clubs in Europe. I think, you know, he's coming up to 28 now, I think he's, and it's, the longer he waits, the less of an opportunity. And I think personally as well from Palace, his market value will decrease the longer that it goes on. But obviously everybody would love Wilf to stay and, you know, the club to build around a team around him that's going to break into that, you know, upper echelons of the Premier League. But realistically, from Wilf's point of view, is that going to happen? He's probably looking at it and thinking, not, maybe not.
No, I mean, it happened in my Football Manager game where I've just won the league with Palace, but that's probably, I probably can't treat that too seriously.
Yeah.
Moving away from, and well, back to a little bit, we touched on the sort of COVID-19 approach with Diaz questions, but in a general sense, you know, how footballers viewing it, it seems to have been a bit of a shift from the concerns. Now people are getting back to training and testing regularly, or certainly at Premier League level in this country. So it seems like there's a bit of a softening towards the approach, and obviously the Premier League have now announced that games are likely to go ahead from mid-June. But, you know, your general feelings about how footballers are feeling right now?
Yeah, just listen, I don't think this is now, until we find an antibody that's going to kind of eradicate it, then we're going to be living at risk until that moment happens. So I think from a personal point of view, the football industry isn't just football industry. It's, you know, the guy that has the burger van outside the stadium. It's the, you know, the merchandise stores. There's a lot of, you know, pubs, bars. There's a lot of, you know, industries that center around football. And whilst, you know, we're still kind of in the early stages of moving out of the, you know, the severity of it, I do think we need to start moving somewhat back to normality from an economical point of view, but doing so in the safest possible manner. I do think going into the next 6, 9, 12 months, there is going to be players that are going to, you know, test positive from it until, you know, like I said, there's a vaccination that can basically stop you from getting it. So I do think we have to somewhat live with an element of a risk, but that risk has to be, you know, as soft as possible, and to make sure that, you know, everything is safe and secure for the football to get back, whether that's playing for the next 6, 9, 12 months with no fans. It might have to be the case. You know, obviously, the sooner we get back to the fans being in the stadium, the better. I'm watching German football and it's hard to watch when there's nobody there, but at least it's back. And like I said, it's not just, I know I've got a lot of people that are in different, like I said, different industries that have suffered from football being shut down because they haven't been able to work.
For you guys, it must be hard because you've only played one game this season. So it's not like you managed to get into a stride and then afterwards you just had to stop. So how are you guys ensuring that the players are keeping fit? I mean, are they still training or have they just set it back and then you're going to restart it all over again?
No, I mean, we've been back for 3 weeks. Yeah, like you said, March the 7th was our opening fixture. Then we shut down on the 17th of March for, I think it was 8 weeks. Then Arizona, like I said this before, was it's one of the safest places to live in America because of obviously the heat and everything that's around here. So we opened up the league opened up 3 weeks ago, but the players were doing similar to what, you know, the Premier League players were doing. They had their own programs. Zoom calls were every day or every other day, making sure, checking in with the players and give them all credit. Each and every single one of them came back when we started again after 3 weeks off with, you know, in good health, good fitness levels. So we're still at a non-contact, still working in somewhat groups, small groups. We're hoping that'll be opened up next week and working towards a target of restarting again in July. But it's been 3 weeks of good training. The guys have been good. They've obviously, some of the players have known people in their family, friends, circle that have had the virus, so they know the severity of what can happen if you get it. So they've been safe and not been stupid when they've been, you know, in lockdown themselves. So it's been good. It's been good to have them back. And for us personally, for me personally, for coaches, it's just great to be back on the grass. It was 8 weeks of flipping grade two and grade four maths and science and all that. Tell you what, the levels of school is different to my day. And it was, I think I found it tougher than me 6 and 9 year olds.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, a lot of people I know have had to suddenly become teachers, and it's been a very, very new experience. But let's jump into a little bit of Palace now. So I'm interested in this angle, really. So Palace started the season relatively well, and then had a real drop off for a period of time, and before you know, a fantastic recovery results and very much pushing up the table as things stopped, which is fairly typical, you know, that a pandemic would appear just as we're starting to push up towards the upper end of the table. But I have to say, during the period, the sort of the dip, if you like, that went on a reasonable amount of time, I think at one stage we'd won 3 in 20 or something like that, I actually genuinely lost a huge amount of faith in what Roy Hodgson was doing. You know, every game you could kind of overanalyze and say, well, he's not using subs enough, he's not made that change there, we're going out and we're doing the same things over and over and expecting different results. I'm just wondering how players feel in that respect, and a general question of what you make of Palace's season.
Yeah, I think it's obviously been a tough season. It seems to be a running pattern with Palace that, you know, they do have these moments of the season where they, you know, they start off either like a house on fire, they don't start well, then they'll have a run of good results, and then it'll hit a lull again. I just think this kind of seems to be a pattern over the last few years. I'd love for them to hit a consistent run and try and get into the 8th, 7th and 6th spots, you know, challenging for Europe, but it just doesn't seem to happen. And the group of players that they've got is more than capable to do so. It's just not working. The tactics not work. I haven't seen as much Palace games this season as I have of previous years, so it's hard for me to comment on how it's kind of going. But from a player's perspective, I mean, they've got the talent pool there to be able to challenge for the highest spots in the league. It just, for whatever reason it is, it's, you know, players might just have a loss of form, which to key players. You know, I don't think Wilf's been as productive this season as he has previous season in terms of goals, things like that. You know, obviously Benteke's been a huge disappointment. You know, his goals record's been poor, you know, been relying on Ayew to get the goals, and even then it was kind of in purple patches. So it's just not clicked on a consistent basis. But like I said, this seems to be kind of a running theme of year after year Palace will have a couple of good results and everything will be rosy and we're talking about trying to break into them, and then all of a sudden we'll have a couple of bad results and, you know, the world's going to end. And it just doesn't seem to be, you know, steady progression, which, you know, I look at Leicester. I know they obviously won the league, but they're, over the last couple of years, they've had a steady progression to try and get into them upper echelons, and they've done so, and they're staying there somewhat this season. It's something that I think, when I look at Palace's squad and Leicester's squad, I don't think there's too much differences in the quality. So it's frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, do you, as a player, you've obviously played under a fair few managers, do you value sort of tactical consistency? Or, you know, as players, when particularly if results aren't great, do you want to, you know, your coach to come give you some new ideas and try something like a little bit different?
It's a good question, because I think back to the time when I was there with, obviously, Dougie. He had us basically drilled into robots that we knew what we were going to do, but we knew what we were going to do if it didn't work. And Ollie came in and kind of threw everything out the window and tried to bring his own philosophy in, which, you know, was totally the right thing to do in his eyes. But we were so geared towards playing a certain way. And it was successful at that time. Obviously, I think it was second or third when Dougie left. Ollie came in and changed it, and it was so hard to go to a different style, a different philosophy. don't think we quite had the players that Ollie wanted to play that way. And to his credit, he recognised that and somewhat tried to blend it, which obviously worked and got us promoted. So it's hard for players when they're kind of told to play a certain style, a certain way, to then kind of all of a sudden change it. It does take time to implement. I know we went through this over here in Phoenix at the beginning of last season, and it took time for us to get our style. And then once we figured it out, we went and won 20 games in a row. But in the Premier League, it's a little bit harder to do. And if it's not quite working, then it's hard to try and change it on the run in the course of a season. It's something that takes, you know, sometimes weeks, months, and even years to do and to master. So when things aren't going well in your own style, it's tough for players, because it's not for the lack of trying or anything like that. It's probably just sheer down to loss of form or whatever.
Yeah, you're right. And there's, yeah, confidence is a massive thing as well. You know, once you get that little knock, although that sort of, particularly with someone like Wilf, you know, being a key player, if he's not 100% at it and taking on the world, if you like, sometimes that's enough to knock the whole team at times. But no, that's a great answer. Thanks. Why do you have so much love for Palace still?
Oh. Do I, Sam? Do you know what it is? Good question. I think football is, you meet so many people over a short period of time. You know, players come and go in your lives from a personal standpoint and professional. That year at Palace, I think obviously what we went through, you know, we were a team kind of made up of players that nobody really wanted, you know, and myself included. Damo obviously came in from not being really wanted at Ipswich. You know, we just clicked, and that was the closest group of players that I've come across. And I mean, I was on a Zoom with Gabs the other day. Me and Gabs just, you know, checked in with each other, and I speak to Damo and Paddy, and I think it's just because of the closeness of that group is why I still, you know, harbour obviously strong feelings for Palace. And plus, obviously, the year that we had, it got promoted. It was the highlight of the season of my career. And, you know, I met a lot of amazing people off the pitch as well as, you know, in the back room. You know, Jane Sanderson at the club. You know, you had Scotty Guy at the fitness coach. It was Matt Roberts, who was a physio, Alex Manos, the physio. Just people that were good people. That, you know, you actually built friendships that, you know, have lasted. I mean, it was about 6 months since I last spoke to Gabs. We picked the phone up and it was as if we'd never spoke to each other. I mean, I spoke to Damo the other week. I hadn't spoken to him for now on it might even be that. I mean, Damo came out to Phoenix to visit us. He was in Chicago and just flew over for 3 days and came and stayed. We had a couple of games of golf. And I think that's just epitomised, you know, my love for Palace, is that it was just good people around at that time. And still to this day, there's still good people there. I'm not saying that there's not, but I think that's just one of the reasons why, you know, I still hold a candle for the club.
Interesting you mentioned golf there. When I was looking earlier at what I was basically doing, I was scientifically measuring the distance between where Patrick is in New York and where you are in Arizona. And it was about, I'd say, two and a bit UK lengths. I was measuring it with my thumb, so I'm not sure exactly what that is. But I also noticed that there was a huge number of golf courses around Phoenix. It kind of sounds, other than the heat, which I can't stand, it kind of sounds absolutely phenomenal.
It's an unbelievable place to live. I mean, golf courses are just ridiculous. I mean, we're now going into the summer months where all the courses are cheap as chips to play. You know, the TPC where they have the waste management. I mean, this might actually be the last week at kind of the peak prices, where I think it's about $400 to play a round. From about next week or the week after, I think it goes down to $50. I mean, yesterday training, it was 114 degrees. So that was at sort of 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, you're going to the mid-afternoon and it's almost touching 120. I mean, it's stupid if you're going for a game of golf. So all the golf prices go down. A lot of the celebrities at this moment in time have flown into Phoenix. The we live not far from the private aviation, and that's jam-packed. And when I was asking one of the owners who's got his own private jet, you know, why is it so busy? He was like, everybody's just flying in to play golf and live in Arizona. You know, I mentioned off camera, you know, all the everything's basically back to work and owner, you know, bars, nightclubs, everything's kind of reopening. So everybody's kind of congregating now into Phoenix, which, you know, it's murder for traffic in the morning. It's like trying to get around the M25 again. It's a great place to live. There's not only that, you know, hiking, there's loads of hikes. The actual Arizona state's got some wonderful little towns that you can go and visit and just have a chill. And it's just, you know, I'm privileged to, you know, obviously work at the football club, but obviously live, you know, in such a great area of America.
Right. We'll let you go fairly shortly. Just realised how long we've kept you. We do like to lie to people about how long we interview them for. But just a really quick one on the article on the Palace official site, where you mentioned just how quickly the move to Palace came about. And that always strikes a chord with me that, you know, when we talked to Dougie, a couple of years ago now, about when he left for Bolton, and he was explaining just how quickly he had to make the decision. And you had the same situation when you effectively reported to QPR, wasn't it, at the time, under Mark Hughes, and were told, oh, you're going on loan to Palace, and you had about 45 minutes to sort of react, and just it wasn't even a choice. And is that really that common in football?
Yeah, it is. It was the same when I left for Barnsley, the kind of the second time, trained all the way up to almost transfer deadline day, and Ollie rang us and said I wasn't going to be in the 25. You know, from previous conversations I had with him, that I was going to be in it, and then just the last minute he brought some players in, and I was out of it, and I'd basically had an hour. I was up in Newcastle at the time, because I think it was just at the end of the international break, and I had an hour and a half to finalise a move to Barnsley. Luckily enough, you know, I was in the northeast, so I mean Barnsley was. Barnsley's a two-hour drive down, and I managed to make it in an hour and a half. So, but that's just part and parcel of football. You basically, when it comes to the kind of the end of the transfer deadlines, you kind of have a suitcase packed and ready to go just in case, and that can happen. You know, it's like you said, when I was at QPR, Neil Warnock was the manager at the time, and you know, rang us up and said you're going down to Palace. You know, get yourself on the road. And it was the Thursday before we played Peterborough on the opening day, the season. I think it was 2011-12 season. And then it was the same. You know, almost Dougie rang us up and said we're going to. I think it was Portugal. No, it was Cornwall. We were going and on a pre-season. He said, "Can you make it down by the morning?" And I was up in Newcastle, so I had to drive down kind of through the middle of the night to get on the bus to come down. And that's just how football works. You know, I've had a couple of periods like that in my career where it's just literally been jump in the car or jump on the train or jump on the plane and get yourself going. It's kind of have boots will travel kind of mentality.
Yes, I mean, it's crazy, you know, life-changing decisions made on the drop of a hat, really. But there we go. Those are the breaks. Obviously, lots of positives for being a professional footballer as well. Getting into that, what are your long term plans? You got any ideas of how long you want to stay in the US? And
it's a good question, because if I'm brutally honest with you, I don't. There's a lot going on at our club here, which is exciting. You know, well, the ownership group here are really trying to progress the club. We're potentially moving into a new facility. Which is going to, you know, purpose-built training fields, similar to Europeans, which is, the plans for it are incredible. You know, like I was saying, I'm kind of transitioning into somewhat of a dual role with the first team and the youth club to kind of help bridge and bring players through. Like we're talking about kind of the academy systems. So because I've obviously came through it at a European club at Newcastle, and you know, obviously worked, you know, alongside Ben Garner, you know, watching Ben when he was at the academy with Gary, and then obviously the other clubs I've been at, so I've got somewhat of a knowledge of how to do it. So there's a lot of progression to be had here. I obviously have aspirations in my own career. I want to manage I don't want to manage, but I want to coach in the Premier League. I want to be a coach in a top European. I want to, you know, potentially work at an international level. So I do have dreams of my own, but it's kind of them dreams will be readjusted. You know, when I'm kind of working through my career, I still kind of have short, medium, and long term goals. And the short term goal at the minute is to try and help Phoenix, you know, progress into the MLS as well. You know, we've got our bid in. I don't know how it's going, but you know, we've got plans to try and get into the MLS too, which would be huge for the club and also for myself personally.
Yeah, that sounds great. And, you know, you get to leave something of a legacy whenever it is you do go. But
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The exciting part of being here is that we are, you know, Rick, myself, and Blair Gavin, who's the assistant, the other assistant with a couple of the other coaching staff, are building something from ground zero. So, you know, like you said, building a legacy here is to be part of it from the beginning is quite, you know, a daunting challenge, but it's a challenge that, you know, if we can build something that's going to last a lifetime here, then, you know, it would be an incredible achievement for us to do and be incredible to be part of.
Absolutely. And we can't have you on without having an obligatory dig at Glenn Murray. Some might say an unnecessary dig at Glenn Murray, but I'm still going to do it. So yeah. Given that Glenn is, you know, 75 years old, has a robot knee, what do you make of him still playing in the Premier League? Not as many games this current season, if you can call it that, as he probably would have liked. But you know, you're still in touch with Glenn, and is it surprised you're still playing?
Yeah, yes and no. I'm still in touch with him. We speak still regularly. You know, he still keeps to be nicking a year after year at Brighton. Somehow, I don't know how. Like you said, I don't know how his knees are coping with it, but. I mean, it's just a testament to how professional he is. Certainly the last stage of his career that, you know, he's managed to have the longevity. You know, similar to Damo. You know, Damo played into his mid to late 30s at Palace, and I think these guys have you know, had the best part of their career has been at the, you know, the twilight end of it. But Muzz, you know, he's a dedicated professional. He's a miserable sod, so he never goes out. He hardly drinks. So it's no surprise that even at 37, he's still, you know, rocking around the Premier League. It's because of, I think, you know, being that boring bastard, excuse the French, has helped him have a longevity. But, I mean, it's great. And I'm so proud to see him continue to play. Obviously not for Brighton, but, you know, we'll talk about that. But from a personal point of view, for him to continue to play at the highest level and scoring goals in the Premier League at, you know, 48-year-old is still some achievement.
Absolutely right. And, you know, he must be a professional to make out that he's enjoying playing for Brighton, you know, year on year.
That's the one thing. Muzz is massively family-orientated. Both in, like, his friend, he's got a close friends of circles. And, you know, Brighton, obviously, he was at Brighton before Palace. And, you know, he's settled down there. His life's down there. And I know when he left, obviously, Palace to go to Bournemouth, you know, he was travelling from Brighton to Bournemouth, which was a hell of a drive for him every morning. But that's just because he's, you know, similar to most of us, he's, you know, he's family first and football second. And, you know, he's made sure that everybody's secure in and around him. And, you know, he's an inspiring figure in more ways than one.
Okay. Well, look, that's all we've got for you. So thank you very much indeed.
Fintons.
Did you notice when during the Peter Ramage interview that I was leaning over to pick something up and I actually fell off my chair and dropped my headphones?
I heard something in the background.
Yeah. When are you listening back to that and edit? See if you can highlight that.
I was confused. What sound? I thought that was from Rambo. Like there's someone in the background, his wife or something might have walked into the room.
So obviously Premier League returning. So obviously it wasn't that much of a surprise because someone who should remain nameless suggested that it would happen just before it happened. But obviously they've announced the Premier League will be returning. I think the first games are on the 16th and I think our first game back would be on the 19th, I'm right in saying.
Yeah, 17th.
There we go. And do you know what? I haven't even looked up yet who we'll be playing. Who are we playing next?
Bournemouth away.
Bournemouth, yeah.
Bournemouth, there we go.
They've got lots of cases. That's dangerous. If they do anything to Wilfried Zaha, I'm going down.
But obviously that, you know, it almost doesn't quite feel real that it's going to be back, and obviously got some reservations about how it'll actually feel, the football's back, but without supporters and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, at the moment, I'm just surprised I'm not more excited than this. So how are you feeling about it, Patrick?
I'm actually getting more excited as I'm getting more details. Again, I think what for me the thing is, it wasn't the first league to return. I think honestly think that the Bundesliga coming back and the way they've done it with the testing of the players and the staff around, and then also how the empty stadiums, the celebrations the players are trying to do, and then forgetting that they're, you know, not supposed to be touching each other, and then they've piped in sound over here for the broadcast. It actually isn't terrible, and the quality of the games I thought have been very, very good. So I was excited if it would be the first league back, but seeing how even America is starting to have some leagues come back into training, I think it's I'm looking forward to it. I watched the video online of the players getting into it, and that's really great. And although I know I'm going to overreact when Pats lose the Bournemouth their first match back, I would enjoy the fact that we're back, and I'm really looking forward to it.
It's going to be different for us, though. As we talked about hot mic for how long, we'll be on hot mic watching a game like that. So you wouldn't really be listening to the players and the fans in that aspect. But I want it back. I want it back because the season needs to be completed. There are teams that need to be relegated. And it's been bugging me off that these teams have been avoiding it. Some of these teams and trying to use the coronavirus to their advantage. So that's what I'm looking forward to. And also, we've got something to play for. As crazy as it might sound, this season has been so weird that you'd think that we're near relegation. But when you look at the points, we're actually 6 points, I believe, of the top six or the top five, which itself does sound crazy, but you never know what's going to happen. Now there ain't no fans in the ground, as we saw in the Bundesliga. There are some surprise results, and with Palace, we do tend to play better away from home. There aren't no home grounds. Even though we're playing at Selhurst Park, there's no home advantage. There's no real home advantage. So it's going to be interesting to see how Roy actually sets up the side, and to see how, if he changes it at home compared to away, or do we just play one style of football for both types of games?
Yeah, well, I'm not looking forward to Hodgson not using 15 substitutes, by the way. But I'm looking at we won our last three matches 1-0 each. It's been so long. We beat Newcastle 1-0, Brighton 1-0, and then Watford 1-0. We're actually on a roll, so Bournemouth better watch out.
I suppose. Actually, the excitement started to ramp up there when DR reminded me that teams might get relegated, and I've just remembered Brighton's running.
Exactly.
So all of a sudden, there's a big smile on my face, and I can't wait for football to be back. Anyway, we haven't got a huge amount of time, so we'll rumble on a little bit. The club released their financial results this week. I think the headline is there was a small profit of about £5 million. But when the results were initially submitted, Palace has, I think, no external debt. Have managed to reduce the money still owed on transfers from about £43 million down to about 13 or 14. Can't quite remember the figures. There's some amortisation, I think that's how it's pronounced, in terms of, because that's quite high, and you're thinking probably in terms of the value of players like Sacco and Benteke there. There's some quite big drops in their overall value. I think the main point of consideration was the finances look considerably better because Aaron Wan-Bissaka got sold. And kind of a nice reminder for people that we are still that club that has to sell a big player for big money on a fairly regular basis to keep us on an even keel. So a little bit of a reality check there for some. And probably the final thing worth saying from my perspective was that because of the COVID-19 pandemic, Palace have had to actually take on another interest-free loan of, I think, £20 or £25 million to keep the cash flow right. But the pleasing thing was we went into the COVID-19 situation on a very secure financial footing, which you do have to give credit to those running the club for, because not easy to do in the Premier League.
Yeah, but I think one thing that I'm taking out of this is that the investment that's needed at the stadium and also the youth facilities is vital, because we've reached a stage where Premier League Premier League money, TV money, that is very important for us. But we need to become that club that produces. It's not easy to produce an Aaron Wan-Bissaka, but if we invest in academy and give them more resources to develop the players like that and potentially sell them on for maybe 20 to 25 million type players, not 50 million type players like Aaron Wan-Bissaka, then that'll be a massive advantage to us. But another thing to note is our wage bill only increased by two million, which is quite incredible considering the inflation that we see in the Premier League market in terms of money spent on players. So that's a positive. And yeah, I mean, the only real downside is that where I think our turnover ratio to wage is 77%, and UEFA recommends around 70%. So we're still not on the level that we should be there. But of course, we need more money. And the only way we could do that is if we can improve the stadium and have corporate facilities there to try and make use of the stadium when football is not even getting played. So stadium is very important. I want to see what happens with that, but that needs to really be done.
You know, with this pandemic, though, I have to give Palace owners a lot of credit because we've done a lot of things around the club. You know, Palace for Life Foundation did a lot of things, feeding people, and Palace as a club did a lot of things. You didn't hear about players having to go on furloughs, anything like that. I was watching Scott Guyett was talking about keeping the players fit, and they had given every player like a bike and workout equipment. I mean, we've done a really good job financially. And I know people want to get on the case of Parrish and then the American billionaires, but truth is, billionaires, they want out. And but they're there now, and they're supporting the club financially, as that financials will say. And I just think that once we are sold, things will get better as far as like they are saying with the youth facilities. But right now, I think we're on pretty good financial ground because then we have two owners, or maybe one that wants to get out. But I think once we are sold, I think we're going to be in a much better situation. And the squad has to be changed up. We know we've got to get younger, but I'm not about that right now. I think, but right now, we should focus on, you know, how we're doing now, and then again, ending this season and starting next season, hopefully on a positive note.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Look, we'll crack on from this. So the season tickets and the match tickets situation has now been confirmed by the club. So the match ticket is pretty straightforward. You had the option of, you know, donating the money you'd already paid towards match tickets to the club's academy, and that would basically help the club fulfil their goal of being the leading academy in the UK. And they'll use that money specifically to target that and won't go to waste at all. And then they would be offering people a limited edition enamel badge as a thank you, that kind of stuff. The option two was donate the refunds to the Palace for Life Foundation, which is obviously a very worthy cause. And finally, the option three was a refund. For myself, you know, I had some outstanding match tickets that I purchased for other people. So really, the decision wasn't mine. It was other people's decisions. And they opted for the refund, which is, it was absolutely fine. One of them has said that they'll just simply spend the money in the club shop when they get it back. And the other one just you know, would like their money back because they're not going to go and get to see the game. And I think that's perfectly fair. And I think it's great that the club offered those options. And I don't really think there's anything contentious there in terms of match tickets. Season tickets was very, very similar. Other than the first option was to become an Academy founder member. So that basically was enabling, you were waiving your right to a refund. Those funds were then directed towards the Club Academy. And they gave a list of benefits with that. So you get an invitation with a guest to watch a first team training session. You take part in a signing session. I don't know, I'd get to sign some autographs for people. I'm not sure they necessarily want those. But you also get a tour of the training ground, and you obviously agree dates in advance. You'd also get an invitation for you and a guest to visit the new academy site for a tour. You'd get a season ticket for the under-23s in the coming season. A £10 gift card at the club shop. A limited edition enamel pin badge. And you also have your name listed as an academy founder member on a wall at the academy reception. Which is a nice little package, I thought. It's interesting. We'll get some other views in a sec. You also got the option to credit that amount to your Palace ticket account for the next season ticket for 2021. You could donate the funds to the Palace for Life Foundation, again, a massively worthy cause there, or again, the option to have a refund issued within 28 days. So nice range of options there. And again, I'd say from a personal level, I think I'll be going with the Academy founder member idea. I like the idea of giving the money back and getting some interesting benefits and going to see a bit more, you know, around the club that I wouldn't necessarily have got an opportunity to see another time. But, you know, that's for me because I'm the sort of person where I would probably waste that money if I got it back anyway on things that I wouldn't get a long-term benefit from. I would. I've already spent that money in my mind, and I also do feel, even though I respect the fact that the club's owners have wealth far beyond anything I'll ever see, I do kind of feel an obligation as a Palace season ticket holder, as someone who's dedicated a large proportion of their own personal time and energy in supporting Crystal Palace. I'd like to feel like I'm doing my bit. That's how I feel about it. So those are my views. Let's throw over to Mr. D.R. Kernes. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what I think. I've said this before. They're taking advantage. We've got millionaires and billionaires at the club, and they're asking us to put money into the academy. I don't think that's right at all. I think there should be two options. I'm not going to, you know, you're free to do whatever with your money. And I understand why you would put the money in the academy, but we shouldn't. They're taking advantage of how much we love the club, basically. Why the benefits, fair enough, they sound exciting and stuff, but why on earth are we putting money into the academy? I mean, this isn't 2010. This isn't Palace struggling with financial. We just talked about the finances here. We made a £5.5 million profit. So why are they taking money from us and putting it in the academy? I just don't think that's realistic. I don't think that's a good option, in all honesty. I feel like the only option should have been the refund and also maybe donating to Palace for Life, because they're going to, at the end of the day, if they're going to recruit these players and they're going to make money from that. And yeah, that's how it's going to work. So I don't think that's the right option, but I'll be getting, me personally, I'll be getting a refund. I don't know how exactly the Palace for Life bit works in terms of, do I give a percentage or do they take it all? Otherwise, I would have shared 50-50 with the refund, but I don't think you can do that. So I'm going to go with the refund, and later on, I can use that money for Palace for Life if needed.
Yeah, I don't spend people's money. It's not my job. But I think that under the circumstances, I think the choices are they're great. I mean, Palace and Community Club, we're not Man City. We're not the new Newcastle. So we don't, I mean, you talk about billionaires, DR, and I get it. I understand what you're saying. But if I had a chance personally to help the academy in any way I could, that's 100% I'd be behind that. And then Palace Life Foundation too. I mean, I would just do that. I mean, I'm a long-time CPFC member in the United States. I only do it to give them money. I've flown over a couple of times for some matches. But for the most part, I just do it to support the club. And again, because I support what is my local and club, even though I'm not there anymore. And I get that, you know, you think, oh, well, they've got owners that should be funding it. Yeah, I get all that. But to me, to be part of the help some kids come through with the camos, feel like I've whatever small part I put in, I'd love to do that if I could. And if they had it over here as far as my membership and I could do that, I'd 100% do that. Like I said, I understand that you wouldn't want to do it. Again, I'll spend your money. But I just think that the choice they gave, and Chris said, if you don't want to do it, you get your money back, great. But I don't think it's necessary to put down the fact that, you know, because of billionaires, we should have a better academy. Yes, we, you know, that's their job in some ways. But like I said, if I could help out in any way, I would definitely do that.
All I'm going to say is, what they could have done is put a fundraiser. If they really need money for the academy, they could put a fundraiser. And if people like me, who I would be happy to put money into the academy as well, but I don't want to put all my money into the academy where it's run by millionaires and billionaires and helping them, basically their business grow, because we've seen it. Like, Palace cannot grow much more until our facilities improve. And that's two. The reason why we're improving academy is to get more Wilfred Zaha and Aaron Wan-Bissaka's, to grow them and then sell them on for more money. The reason why we're improving the stadium is, once again, more money related. So at the end of the day, it helps them. So I wouldn't mind putting money into the academy if it's needed, but I'd rather do it in a fundraiser, something like that, rather than get my season ticket money and put it all in there. I don't think we've got the option to give 20% of our season ticket money or 50% of our season ticket money. You're asking for all of our season ticket money to put into the academy. But that's how I see it. Like, I respect everyone's opinions, but that's how I view the situation personally. I don't think it's the right thing to do. A fundraiser would have been more appropriate in my eyes.
Yeah, but again, you're acting as if they're telling you to do it. They're giving you choices. So if you don't want to do it, don't. And again, they have put money into the academy. They have. They have put money into the academy. Like they've done it before. So, and the fundraiser sounds, to me, it sounds a little bit cheesy to say that, you know, we're going to do a fundraiser. Again, you have a choice, DR. You want to do it, great. If you don't, don't. But to put them down for giving you choices, I think that's a little bit, to me, that's a little bit bizarre, but that's just me.
It's an interesting thing. I think, a lot of it depends on your own personal circumstances. And, DR's a student somehow. And You know, I mean, look, you know, through the COVID thing, I'm really fortunate. It's, my job, my livelihood has not been affected in any way. So I'm much more likely to have a very sort of serene view of these kinds of things. So, but I think, you know, I respect DR's point and I do understand the argument. But I do think people would do well to remember when you talk about things like the academy there and the improving the facilities, that's all there to make money. That and the making money isn't just about lining people's pockets. You know, I'm sure they'd all like to be able to take. I think it's only Parrish that takes a wage, and I think anything above the standard that he gets, he puts back into the club. I think that's in the financial results, I think. But you know, that generating a bigger income, it enables the club to compete at a higher level. Because if you look at the Swiss Ramble, did a brilliant rundown of the Palace situation and the overall Premier League situation, as they always do when the financial results are released. And if you look at the money we bring in, we're, I think, 10 times lower than that, you know, the top six in terms of the income we bring in. So we're left with no choice when you know, people like me get all irate because we lose to Arsenal or something like that, or we lose to Man United, or we fail to compete properly against Spurs or whatever, you know. You know, it should always be with the perspective that we aren't competitive in a number of ways with them. So it never is. I'm always angry, but it should always be with that perspective. And I think it's very hard if you take the line that you're just going to sit there. Yes, you're going to pay to watch Palace, but basically you want someone else to match your ambitions with their personal wealth. It's very difficult to sit there and, you know, and just to have that as a complete expectation rather than a hope. We all hope that would happen, that Palace are given enough money to compete at that level, comply with FFP regulations, just generate huge sums of money just through existing. But it's just, in reality, it probably doesn't work that way. So I do feel we still need to recognise that just because we're Premier League, you know, as fans, we all have a part to play. That's just how I view it, and other people will view it differently. I was going to ask Sam's view, but we haven't got a lot of time. But Sam, do you have an opinion?
Well, I think, you know, season ticket holders have had, 29 games out of their tickets. So it is just the final wrapping up of the season, really.
I mean, you don't include away games in the season ticket. So, but yeah.
Oh, no, I suppose not. All right, then.
You're just going to back away from that. Never mind. No longer have an opinion.
I don't have a season ticket. I don't.
Okay, well, I'll let you off. But you know, I know we've had a degree of, and obviously the refund's calculated based on that. We've watched a certain number of games and all that sort of stuff. But no, I do. I mean, I know what you're saying because I kind of feel that way as well, in the sense that I've had the benefits of my season ticket for quite a lot of the season. Anyway, should we crack on? I think it is undoubtedly it's quiz time. So let's do the quiz.
Okay then, this week is Back of the Nest Goes to the Seaside, because Brighton and Hove Albion have now gone more than 150 days without winning a game, so we are celebrating that rivalry with this quiz.
Question number one from me. Mm-hmm. Is this another in the quizzes where Mikey's just going to guess all the answers and beat us? Yeah, it is. Yeah, so it doesn't reward actual knowledge. It rewards clicking the right thing.
Yes.
Okay, great. I love those quizzes almost as much as Mike does.
That's so harsh. You're such a sore loser, Amber. Mikey, don't listen to this guy. Anyway, let's get into it.
If DR beats me, I'm saying it now. If DR beats me, I'm never doing the show again.
Beat you last time.
Yeah, that's why.
Should we start then?
Yeah.
Please do
this.
If this is going to be the last thing we hear from Hambo.
I need to win. Help me, Sam.
Okay, question one. Brighton and Palace first played against one another. My tenuous quizzes continue. First played against one another in 1920, but what is the date of the game? The 17th of September, the 24th of October, the 19th of November, or the 25th of December?
I mean, I've gone against my rule, which is to go in the middle somewhere, and I regret it instantly.
The answer is
what?
The 25th of December.
Right, pause this before.
Yeah.
Why did we play on Christmas Day? Who plays on Christmas Day?
Because up until the 1950s, football was very much a part of the festive season, with a full range of fixtures being played on Christmas Day and Boxing Day. Palace won that game 2-0, a very Merry Christmas.
So yes. Are you reading part of that?
Yes.
All right.
Is that allowed?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Just I initially didn't realise you were reading it. I just thought, why are you so, speaking so weirdly?
By the way.
Sorry. No, I read that. That was just it. Teams used to play up to 3 games across Christmas Day and Boxing Day.
It is unfair when Patrick was around in 1920.
That was around 1920. Yes, I was around that time. I guess I'm getting to get into Sam's head now, how she does questions.
Don't do that. It's a bad place.
Yeah. risky game. Let's move on to question 2 then. Brighton suffered their first league defeat at the Amex to Palace in September 2011, but what was the goal-scoring order? Zaha, Ambrose, Murray, Ambrose, Zaha, Murray, Zaha, McCarthy, Murray, McCarthy, Zaha, Murray. I figured everybody would remember the Murray being at the end. So
I would have got that a lot quicker if I hadn't read that as Palace suffered their first league defeat and then got really confused. Oh, what happened there? I mean, the split. Answer was, of course, Sam.
Ooh. The answer was Zaha, Ambrose, Murray. And the goal. Yeah.
So, I mean, I can obviously, being there and it being one of the best days of my life, I vividly remember Zaha being the equaliser. It was Mikhail Smith who scored for Brighton first, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And then and obviously Zaha drilling it across the keeper, but it took forever to go in that bottom corner from the other end. To the point where when you watch it back, there's a considerable delay between the ball going in and the crowd cheering. Then obviously Ambrose bundled one in, didn't he? And then the for fuck's sake Murray goal. So yeah.
But your memory is very good.
Yeah, very good.
So let me just check who got that wrong.
DR and
me.
Mikey.
So there's plenty more illogical questions coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Come on,
Sam. All right, here we go.
Question 3. Palace and Brighton have played a total of 101 games in League and Cup and scored 274 goals in total. But how are the goals split? Brighton 145, Palace 129, Brighton 135, Palace 141, Brighton 140, Palace 134, or Brighton 131, Palace 143.
I've gone against instinct again because every time I try and avoid round numbers, I'm wrong.
So the answer was Brighton 135 and Palace 141. I am disappointed in whoever said that Brighton had scored more goals than Palace.
That was me.
And Patrick. Oh, who?
What would you just say, Sam?
Why would you think that Brighton had scored more goals?
Do you know what? The numbers didn't matter. I just went for even number ending. That's how my brain works. Thought your brain worked the same way. I guess I was wrong.
So who got that right? Was it Mikey?
Of course it was.
Yeah.
Standard. He's back.
We'll move on to question 4.
So the seaside thing is all Brighton related?
Yeah.
Okay.
How many 0-0 draws have there been in the 101 games? 14, 23, 8 or 27?
Oh, Jesus, I clicked the wrong thing.
Well, you know the answer.
Knew the answer.
No, I clicked something different to the thing that I meant. Because it doesn't matter. I might be right. I might be right. I might be wrong. Right with a wrong click and can claim exactly. I was lying.
The answer is 8.
Oh, what?
Everybody went for something different.
So who got that right? Mikey again.
Obviously, 100 games, 8%, 0-0. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually clicked 14 and was going for 23, but it was so stupid because you're right, it's nil. It's not draws, it's nil-nil draws, isn't it?
Sam.
I'm sleeping. Did you really ask whether the seaside thing was all about Brighton? Did you not listen to my description at the beginning?
I shut off because you're reading it, weren't you? You sounded, just,
never mind.
I'm all right.
Question
now.
Question five. What is the largest victory? Brighton 6, Palace 0. Palace 6, Brighton 0. Brighton 5, Palace 1. Palace 5, Brighton 1.
My head
Some
hurts.
Horrible, horrible person.
I didn't want to click that. Why did I don't know, Sam. Why do you give me questions I don't know the answer to? My God.
Palace 6, Brighton 0.
Do you know why I did that, Sam? Sam Logic said, why would you pick Palace to lose? That's why I picked it.
Exactly. These stats heavily favour Palace.
Exactly. Well, you'd never think it would happen, so I picked it.
See, my thought was, okay, well, it's not the Palace 5-0 win. And Palace are always a disappointment to me. So it'll have to be I just couldn't see it being a 6-0 Brighton. So I went for the next worst thing, which was 5-0 Brighton.
Love it.
Nice. Oh. But the victory came on the 11th of February 1950 when both teams were playing in the old Third Division South. So there you go.
You there, Patrick?
Yes, I mean, no.
Just checking. No, I know it's a running joke, but I'm still going to say it every time.
I don't mind. I don't mind at all.
Question six. Easter Monday 1989 saw an unusual meeting between the two sides in the old Division 2. But what was it that made the match unusual?
The trouble is, two of the things make sense. Why would you do this?
Because I'm horrible. 5 penalties were awarded in 27 minutes. I'm going to have to pause it because I can't read them all out. 3 penalties were missed. The game saw the 100th and 101st goals from the front pairing of Wright and Bright, or D, all of the above.
It could easily be A and B. It could easily be A or B. That's the thing.
It could. I hate
this. And it wasn't anything. All of them. I hate you so much.
I love Sam.
Yeah,
come on, Patrick.
Hambo, do you know if you make a mistake, you change your answer?
You
can change your answer if you press the wrong button.
Oh, for
okay, I just learned it just now. I changed it. And it worked.
Thanks.
You got 5 questions to go. Relax. You've got a chance.
It's all fine. 4 questions.
It is. 4, sorry. Who's in the lead, by the way? Just check. Can we have a quick round up?
Well, you know, the man from the... Yeah. Patrick, you're flying away in the lead.
Wow. Amazing. Who's in last place? How many points does he have?
Well, disappointingly, DR, with none.
You know what? Your quizzes are actually awful. I'm sorry.
Doesn't matter. One right, and it's the quizmaster's fault.
I just have to say, what sort of questions are these? You're asking me about what happened on 1989. I was born like 20 years later. How would I know what happened on Easter Monday?
Do you remember when we used to do quizzes where it rewarded actual knowledge? I remember those days. They were good, weren't they? Because I used to win them.
Nope. Oh, these are much better.
Anyway.
Question 7. I like my quizzes. How many goals has Glenn Murray scored for Brighton across league and cup games? So 103, 107, 111 or 115?
Just taking a punt because why would I know?
Yeah, this is a punch.
The trouble is, if DR's got this right, he goes ahead of me, and then the show's
and then you have to bow out.
Yeah.
The answer was.
I hate you.
Finally, another question. Right,
you're right, DR.
No, I just I don't care about Brighton. All you lot are plastic. That's all it shows. A lot of the detail,
but I love it.
It shows I'm the least plastic. Technically, I'm winning. If you actually look at the scores, you should have 0 in all of this. It's too much about Brighton.
All right, then. Question 8. Zaha scored twice against Brighton to secure the Eagles. That question doesn't make any sense. To secure the Eagles into the playoff final in 2013. In which minutes were his goals scored? 69 and 88, 71 and 88, 71 and 89, or it's irrelevant, the better team won.
I've changed my my answer 3 times.
You can select multiple answers, so I've just done them all.
Oh.
I think that's cheating. cheating.
And I changed my answer from the right answer. For God's sake, I hate myself.
So there were two right answers.
I just saw that. Isn't that great?
69 I still got it wrong. And 88, or it's irrelevant, the better team won. But what I can't understand is how only 20% of people got that right.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. Mathematically work. Oh, does it split Mikey's answer?
Yeah.
So you lose points for answering every, every answer.
What is the actual answer, though?
69 and 88.
Yeah, and I watched it all, every second of that game recently, and I knew that. And then I clicked it, and then I clicked to something different because someone told me I could change my answer. And if I didn't know that, I'd done anyway. It's fine.
Oh, sorry.
I'm not ultra competitive. I don't hate losing. Let's move on.
Question 9. The 1920 season is set to return in June, but how many league wins have Brighton had so far this season? 6, 7, 8, or 9?
I mean, it's probably not what I went for, but I went for what every Palace fan should go for.
Wait, let's see if this works.
The answer is...
Yes. I got it right. Everyone.
Sam Logic, the lowest one.
Yeah.
I wanted to embarrass them.
That was all right because I could live with being wrong on that one.
Exactly.
Are you ready for the final question?
Oh, I cannot wait.
We need a recap of the scores first before you get to the last one.
No, because then obviously there's no suspense if you give the scores for obvious reasons.
You're right. Go ahead. Continue. All right.
Question 10. Brighton were relegated in which year? 1983, 1990, 1992, 1996, or 2006?
From what division? Or any division?
Any
doesn't
division.
Matter.
Okay, gotcha.
Is this going to be a multiple one? It is, isn't it? Oh, now I hit confirm now. Oh.
Could be all five.
Yes! A what? Why don't I get points? Because I answered incorrectly.
You only get points for answering them all correctly.
Oh, that is... Oh, I didn't know that. How would I know that?
Love that trick.
It doesn't let you have all right answers, so I had to put one wrong answer in there, which was 1990, but everything else was right.
Annoyingly, because I knew the first one because it wasn't. Then I think they got to an FA Cup final.
They did. They lost the final to United. That's why I knew it was that year too. Yep, 83. Yeah.
So then I thought, well, there's no need to think about the rest of the question, is there? Because I know the right answer.
Okay. And then would it have been easier to ask the question which year weren't Brighton relegated?
Yes.
It would.
That's
been,
not yeah. Sam though.
Just, I agree. Sam, you're fired.
No. Because Sam. Great job. Can we get a recap of the scores, please?
Well, I'd just like to point out that Mike wrote this question, not me. So, for the final score.
Great. Beautiful.
In fourth place is young DR with 9 points.
Well played.
In third place, bronze medal.
Podium.
Podium place, 20 points. In second, not quite maintaining his streak.
I have a problem maintaining my streak half of the time.
That's what she said.
I wish I hadn't said that. Mikey with 33, but gold place, Patrick O'Connor.
That's what they say, isn't it?
7 points.
That's what they say, gold place. They say that all the time.
Unbelievable.
God.
From quiz master to quiz winner. Love it. Sam, love you. Great job.
And he's first place. That is gold place.
I made you a sucker.
I win.
Good. Well, that was that. It was slightly less tenuous than some of them.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I enjoyed it in some ways. If you just throw some questions in there that might benefit someone who knows something about Palace, that'd be good. That'd be really sweet.
I'll take it under advisement.
Yeah, take it under advisement. I mean, just do what you want, really, because, you know, we have fun every time, don't we?
Yeah.
Do we?
Well, do we?
Well, at least I beat DR. I feel good about that. So, yeah, thank you very much.
We all did beat DR, by the way.
We all beat DR, yeah. Let's get that to proper context. We all thrashed DR by quite some considerable distance. Which, actually, that all feels right with the world again. So that's all right. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Mikey, for producing. Thank you to Rambo for being our guest, to DR and to Patrick. For you for listening, and we will be back ahead of the first game of the season. Sort of. How to say that properly? Don't know. But join us then. Bye.
Back of the Chest, Coronavirus Self-Isolation Podcast.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.